This audio recording is produced by Food Addicts in Recovery Anonymous, also known as FA. FA is a program based on the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is free and open to anyone who wants to stop eating addictively. The following is one FA member's story of recovery. The opinions expressed here are those of the individual member and do not represent FA as a whole. If you are new or uncertain about FA, we encourage you to listen to several stories to gain an understanding of what the program offers. For information on the FA program, please visit our website, foodaddicts.org.
Hello. Welcome to this virtual qualification recording of Food Addicts in Recovery Anonymous, FA. I'm a food addict from Evanston, Illinois, and I will share my story of recovery from food addiction. I'm going to try and follow the format of how it was, what happened, and how it's been since. But I do want to start somewhere in the middle and tell you a story about walking into the kitchen like I always did wherever I went. This was pre-FA. And the first stop every time I came home was always the kitchen. And I'd walk into the kitchen, I'd open the fridge, and I'd look for something. And I always was looking for like something to, I don't know, to make me feel better, to give me some kind of comfort, even if I wasn't aware of any discomfort. I just wanted something. And this particular day, I opened the fridge and there wasn't anybody else in the house. And I stood there and I looked in there and I didn't see anything that I wanted. Nothing spoke to me. And I just kept standing there. And it just suddenly dawned on me how miserable a situation this was. And I said out loud in a house where there wasn't anybody there, I don't know how to eat. And when I said that, I was struck by the truth of that. And I actually, you know, started to cry. And it was just moving to me. That is one of the stories of, say, my bottom, even though it was years before I got into FA. I've been in FA since April of 2011. I came for the sanity. We have a comical phrase. Sometimes you'll hear people say, I came for the vanity and stayed for the sanity. I came for the sanity because I was so sick and tired of trying to quit and manage and control my consumption of sugar and caffeine, which, you know, isn't part of the official FA definition of abstinence, but it was a problem for me. And flour was too. I just didn't know it at the time. But I thought when I came into FA, well, I'll see what happens with this flour stuff too. But I came for the sanity because I just was sick and tired of trying to quit, and I'd quit sugar and caffeine, then I'd go back on again, then I'd quit again, then I'd go decaf, then I'd go half decaf, half decaf, and then sweeteners and lots of sweeteners. And my favorite thing to do in the morning pre-FA was go to the store and the convenience store and like make my own mad concoction, like a mad scientist, you know, all the different flavors and mix them all together. I call those things depth charges, you know, the little creamer things that had the flavorings in them, and get it just right, you know. And I mean, I was insane for sure. So, and I had been in recovery in other programs since 1989. So between 1989 and 2011, I was getting better in other areas of my life. But this area I always knew was a problem, although I also thought that I had it licked or had it figured out because I had been a heavy, heavy kid when I was little. So I'll take you all the way back to childhood. I had a difficult birth. I mean, I almost died, apparently. I was coming out feet first, and the doctor had to do this maneuver to get me to come out right, and I had the umbilical cord around my neck, and my mother had an experience where she thought for sure she wanted to have natural childbirth, but she said she heard God speak to her and say, no, get the epidural, you know, and so she got the epidural, and if she hadn't gotten the epidural, there's no way that doctor could have made that maneuver, so I guess experienced a lot of fear, doubt, and insecurity coming right out of the chute. That was a frightening thing, I guess. I mean, I don't remember it, obviously, but what I do remember is as a kid being afraid, you know, being clinging to my mother's skirt, you know, hiding behind her at the stores. And I didn't know what, I didn't really know what I was afraid of. I just was afraid. And I went to putting stuff in my mouth to somehow make it better. And that, of course, well, it could mean fingers and, you know, other, but it also meant food, you know, food and sweetness. I loved sweetness. And my mother, I think, was a food addict. She was a perpetual dieter. So there actually wasn't a lot of sweet stuff in the house. So I went with what we call quantities, big portions. You know, I like to eat a lot. So having seconds of anything was not considered unusual or strange, and I went for it. So I ate a lot of food. And when I could get sweet stuff, like sometimes find a secret stash that my mother had someplace, like under a bed, you know, I'd find those things and I would go after them. And then when I got allowance, when I was old enough to get allowance, I spent my allowance on sweet stuff too. And I started to get big as a kid, and I put on weight, and I sort of prided myself from a very early age at not being considered fat. I don't know why necessarily. When I look back at pictures, I can see, well, I wasn't obese maybe, but I was definitely chubby and probably fat too. But I also know that I developed a personality and a character that was very much about pleasing everybody. Not just pleasing, but making sure that you absolutely loved me. So I just wanted that so badly. And I learned that I had talent for being funny and entertaining. And I just, that was, you know, that's a higher power gift. And through the prism and the filter of addiction and you know, fear and doubt and insecurity, I used it as a tool to make my life manageable. And it got distorted. It got warped. It got misused. Nonetheless, I was really good at it. And I became, for shorthand, a class clown, you know, and people could rely on that. But I also walked the line. I love being crazy and outrageous and funny, but I never wanted to be so much so that you might not like me. And that was a hard thing to navigate, but I did the best I could. Meanwhile, I'm talking like in ages 9, 10, 11, and going into the teens, getting bigger and bigger, really loving the idea of hippies and freedom and all that. And I let my hair go long, and I became kind of a imposing figure of a giant guy with long hair, liked to wear big wingtip shoes and make fun of how much I loved sugar and junky food. I made a joke out of it. And I thought somehow maybe that would give me some cover, you know. Well, if I think it's funny, then there's no problem here. I mean, I really never thought it was a problem either, although I did know that I hated my body. And I looked down at my body, and I just know I can remember looking down and just seeing around my waist all that extra flesh and just wishing I could hack it off somehow. You know, if there was a way to just magically hack it off, oh, I would have done that, but I also have a very low tolerance for pain, and I wouldn't go for that, believe me. So, but the misery of like facing this thing I couldn't avoid, which was I don't know, fat or overweight or have a problem. And this is right around the time when I'm really interested in girls too. And nobody's going to be interested in, you know, a guy like me. And I was sort of like the sad clown, you know. I was great at school, and at home I just buried myself in listening to music and fantasy and being a hippie, and I don't know. I never used alcohol or marijuana, in those high school years. But I ate lots and lots of sugar. And the more freedom I got, you know, with my movements and all, both parents were quite self-absorbed and didn't pay a great deal of attention to me in a kind of a benign way. I had everything I needed, but I had a lot of leeway and I could eat whatever I wanted as long as I had the money for it. One quick story or two about my childhood is my mother went on strike. My parents were like at odds with each other for years and years and years, as long as I can remember. And they eventually divorced. And in those final years of my high school, I was the youngest kid. Both my brother and sister had flown the coop. They were not around. And my mother didn't want us to cook dinner anymore because it was at the dinner table that my father apparently was at his best at saying stuff that would just trigger the heck out of her. So she went on strike, which meant me and Pa went out to dinner just about every night for you know, junky restaurant food. So I was in heaven, you know, and it went like that. Now, in college, I lost a ton of weight because I was panicked that I would never have a girlfriend, really. And that was my motivation. And I got on a scale one day after a very rigorous game of basketball, and I thought, I'm gonna see 200 on the scale. And I saw 230. And I don't know where that came from. So I said, this was my first semester of college. And what it came from was unlimited all-you-can-eat meal plan. You know, that's what it was. And I just flipped out and started going on my own definition of abstinence based on what I'd seen my mother do in her dieting. And you know what? I lost a bunch of weight. I lost like 60 pounds or something in about a year. And so today, when I look back, I know that was my higher power at work, and I didn't even know it, because there's no way that could have been done on my own volition. I didn't have any willpower, but the weight came off me, and I thought for a while I'd solved the problem. And, you know, years later, I got married, thought that was going to solve all my problems. It didn't. My problems of loneliness or being adored. After the honeymoon, things sort of went south. And I was in what we call a right-sized body, or, you know, what was a normal-sized body for me, according to the charts. But my head was still in the fat guy place. I was still very much checking out my reflection in the mirror wherever I was, or windows, shop windows, car windows, walking down the street. I learned that older model cars made me look a little bit thinner. And the newer models, ooh, I didn't want to look at that because it was like a fun house, you know, too fat. So that marriage ended in divorce after 4 years. And it was in 1989 that the divorce happened, and I went into my first 12-step recovery program. And that's where I learned to treat these other things. But because I'd been in what I considered a normal-sized body and was continuously patting myself on the back all these years for having lost that weight, not giving any credit to a higher power or anything, it was all just something I did, a great achievement, I didn't think I had a problem. But over the years, slowly, slowly, I noticed that my attempts at some form of abstaining from sugar were failing. And I was just thinking too much about it, too. And I'd be in a meeting, have another program, and I'd be hearing all the stuff about what that program was addressing, and all the mental aspects of it, you know, obsession, compulsion, negative thinking, resentments, being critical, all these things, they were very much alive in me. And I wanted, particularly powerlessness, I knew I could not control sugar. And eventually, I remember one day I was at a New Year's Eve, no, the New Year's party. And there was a table filled with stuff that everybody brought. And I just hung around that table like I normally did at parties like that. I would hang around that table and just keep dabbling in it and having a little bit more and a little bit more. And it occurred to me, wait a minute, I think this is powerlessness I'm experiencing here. You know, I know about this in those other areas, but here it is here, you know. Maybe I could apply these 12 steps I've been learning to this thing. But how do I do that? And I went to a program that addresses food and things like once or twice, just as a Band-Aid when things really got bad enough. And I got a teeny bit of relief, but I never heard anything that made me want to come back. So I just was doing it on my own. And then my weight started going up a little bit over the years. I got remarried. My wife, who's still my wife today, 27 years now, I thought of her as like an earth mama, you know, and she natural food and all this stuff. And well, if she can eat this, so can I, even though it's like all sugar, you know, as long as it's all natural grain or this or that. Anyway, I was loosening up on some things and, weight was coming on and I was noticing the powerlessness. I'd be in a meeting of one of these other programs and, I'd be thinking about, when is it appropriate to go fill my cup again with coffee and sweetener and everything else, but so that nobody will notice, or when's that plate of baked goods going to come around to me, you know, which is pretty much common in a lot of other programs, maybe one in particular. Anyway, I think, wait a minute, I'm just, or I might be at the meeting and actually zonked on coffee or a soft drink of caffeine and sugar, and I'd realize like I'm high right now. I'm in this meeting and I'm saying, yeah, I'm 15 years, you know, this other substance, but I'm high. How sober am I really? And that was a chilling thought. So went on like that. I was at a meeting sometime in the 2000s when I was customarily talking about sugar and caffeine in the meeting that really wasn't addressing that. This is pre-FA. And I talked about my powerlessness and craziness. And at the end of that meeting, a petite woman came up to me and said, you know what? I've got the same problem you do. And I found a solution. And then she handed me this piece of literature from FA. And she said, I think there's a member in Chicago, you know, where you live. Maybe you could give her a call. And I was thinking, I'm not going to call one person. That's crazy. You know, like I was afraid of people after all. I thought, what about meetings? No meetings? What kind of outfit is this? You know? But I smiled and politely took the material, tucked it away. And I got to tell you, that piece of paper kept like surfacing in my house amongst all the clutter and stuff periodically. And I never threw it away. And then like years passed and now it got to be around late 2010 and early 2011. And I was in another program and somebody else in that program said, I'm going to check out this FA thing. You know, you talk an awful lot about caffeine and sugar and I get it, you know? So I found this program and I'm going to go. And she went to FA and I said, oh, I think I want to go too. You know, let me know how it is. So she went, she told me about it. So I went to a meeting and I went to that meeting and I was hell bent on getting a male sponsor, you know, because I just what I thought I needed to do. But when it came time for the sponsors to stand up, the female stood up. I'd already been moved or I could identify with stuff she was talking about. And I asked her to be my sponsor. Well, she talked to her sponsor. We all worked it out. And about a week later, she was my sponsor. About a week after that, I thought, where's that piece of paper that I've been holding on to all this time? And I found the piece of paper. Once again, it surfaced right on cue. And there was my sponsor's phone number and name. And anytime I need to be reminded that there's a power greater, there it is. So I came into FA, and, you know, if anybody is, you know, listening for the first time and never know, doesn't know anything about FA, the theme of my recovery from the beginning certainly was, you know, put down the flour and sugar and the large quantities for me. It's not for some people, it's small quantities, not eating enough. For me, I ate too much. But it's for me, it was to have the willingness to do this thing, which is so radical what we do here compared to the mainstream. But I was visited by and given the gift of open-mindedness and willingness. Willingness meaning, yeah, I'll try it. I'll actually do it. And against my better judgment. And that was a higher powered thing, because I'd always been a kind of a rebel, like I said earlier, a hippie. I liked doing things my own way. If I could start my own 12-step program of Humans Anonymous, I'd say I was powerless over having to have things my way, and my life became unmanageable. And so I heard my higher power say, hey, after in my head, many times after my sponsor would suggest things, and I started piecing things together and thinking, this is crazy. I can't do all this stuff. And it doesn't make sense. And like, why do I have to do this and that? And then the voice, small, still voice, said, hey, here's a chance for you to exercise a muscle you've never exercised your whole life. The muscle of taking a suggestion without poking holes in it, litigating it, fighting it. What would it be like if you just said, okay, I'll do it? And I found amazing freedom in that. Because once I make that decision, I don't have to worry about anything. I just take orders, another thing I don't like doing, or taking direction. So I started taking orders, direction, whatever. It's rarely orders. My sponsor was so good at being gentle, kind, and direct. And I never got a suggestion that was bad, that didn't turn out right. And so I put the food down, typical food addict. My greatest curiosity to come in here, honestly, was I wanted to find out what you guys eat. And I wanted to know, is it going to be enough? And from day one, it was like, this is totally enough. And I like it. It's good. And so that was all happening. But also what surprised me was immediately I realized for me to do this program, to do these tools, to get on my knees every morning and ask my higher power for the gift of a day of abstinence, to read the 24-hour-a-day book every day. That's a book we have here. To telephone people and make contact with three people at least every day, go to three committed meetings. Those are meetings that I don't miss no matter what. They're in my schedule. Making weighed and measured meals, you know, buy a scale and do it exactly the way it's done. And then read from our literature in the evening and then pray again and say thank you for the gift. And 30 minutes of quiet time or meditation every single day, you know, to do all these things, they require that kind of willingness that you have to, something's got to change. So I talked to another old timer who said, you know, it's not just a good idea to have a personality change. It's kind of a necessity, because if you didn't have a personality change, you'd never do this stuff. So I don't, you know, maybe this sounds too daunting for you if you've just walked in the room, but I want to take it back to the simplicity of just weighing and measuring the food and being abstinent and simply taking directions and just living in the day Now, that's the main thing. My sponsor would sometimes make a suggestion, and I'd say, oh, I don't know about that. And then she'd say, well, could you do it just for one day, just for today? And I'd go, then my pride would come up, and I'd go, yeah, of course I can. And that was a little trick, you know, to get me to change. And I saw that it worked. So great spiritual awakenings too, and growing in this program, which are a byproduct of the food being in the right place. That's why I want to stress coming in here just to, you know, lose weight or get your food right is a fine reason to come in and just and see what happens, you know, keep an open mind. That's what happened for me. It's been 12 years now, and I see changes. Oh yeah, yeah. I was saying all those tools I got to do that put me in direct opposition to people in my family who say didn't want me to do certain things. Like typically, my father-in-law would say, "Well, you know, this is great that you're doing this, but you know, someday you can probably just have a little treat over here or a cheat day or something like that." Or my wife, she had to let go of making things that I used to love to eat, but they didn't fit my food plan anymore. And it was revealed that, you know, she equated love and food very closely. And that was a rocky one. So what I had to learn to do, which I'd known was a problem of mine for many years, was learning to say no when I mean no and say yes when I mean yes. Or just to not say yes when I actually mean no. And that was like put into play immediately in this program when I would say, I've got a meeting tonight. It's a committed meeting. So no, I can't watch that TV show with you tonight. Or you know, any host of things like that. And then my sponsor said, sounds like you got the courage of your convictions. I got words to go with these things that were in my mind and in my being that I didn't know how to describe. And now I know, you know, that's courage of convictions. So a lot of wisdom comes from this program. And so the last thing I'll say is I'm 69 years old, 162 pounds, which is probably what I weighed in eighth grade. And when I think about, you know, the final act or however much time I've got, being an FA is a great place to be. Keeps me busy, gives me a spiritual awakenings, a closeness with a higher power. Oh, and it reveals to me who I truly am. Before FA and before recovery in general, I identified with my illness, with my disease, with all the negativity. In FA, I identify with myself as the work of a higher power that shines. So I'm going with that. Thank you for listening to my story of recovery from food addiction.
Thank you for listening to this audio recording. To hear additional recordings or to learn more about Food Addicts and Recovery Anonymous, you can visit our website, foodaddicts.org.